Are you ready for the entertainment experience of a lifetime? Knockdown, Dragout, hard-hitting conversations, debates, and interviews. Well, if you said yes to any of these questions, sit back, relax, and enjoy something like no other. This is the Isolation Series Podcast, presented by the Scott Robles team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate, by WellbeingsPerformance.com for all your online meeting needs, by Barbarian Steakhouse, Canada's premier upscale restaurant. For more information, go to Barbarians.com. By ImprintPilates.com Toronto and the Greater Toronto Area's premier Pilates studio. And by the Toronto Immune and Digestive Health Institute. For more information, go to TIDHI.ca. Here now is your host, Spencer Miller.
Hi, then. Welcome to this Monday, August 22nd, 2022 edition of the Isolation Series. Me, Spencer Miller, very pleased to be joined by my co-host and partner in crime in this little thing we like to refer to as the Isolation Series. And of course, I am talking about the one and only Paul Shields. And Paul, a little bit later on in today's episode, we will be having a first ever in-person guest with us, or at least with me on my side. My best friend, Sean Sarasano, will join us a little bit later on in the episode to discuss little sports more importantly, some WWE and overall wrestling. But because the format has been flipped upside down the last couple of episodes that we told people about, I'm going to put it back into your court once again on this Monday, the 22nd of August, to get us through a couple of topics from the last several days.
Thanks, Spence. Great to be back, and great to chat with you and Sean, as always. Wanted to start with a topic we talk about lots on the Isolation Series, and that is our beloved Blue Jays coming off a really rough stretch where they had lost 9 of 11. The Jays went into Yankee Stadium and managed to take 3 of 4 from the Yankees. And as we sit here on Monday morning, they are now tied for the first wild card spot with the Rays, who they have 9 games against in the final 40-ish games of the season. So your thoughts on the series and the bounce-back series from the Jays and what the next 40 games will look like as we come into the home stretch of the Major League season?
Well, no question about it. The Yankees have had the worst record, seemingly, or close to the worst record since the All-Star break. They've been struggling mightily in the first half. They got themselves out to such a big lead that even with the struggles that they've had over the last 6 weeks or so, it hasn't really affected them all that much. But you could really see that the frustration leading into yesterday's game and yesterday's victory really was starting to boil over in their dugout and different things like that. And we know that when Alek Manoah takes the mound, more oftentimes than not, he is not apologetic for 1 second for A, who he is, or B, how he pitches. And that came to a head when he went high in on Aaron Judge, their star and soon to be AL MVP candidate for this season. And then there was a big words exchanged initially between Judge and Manoah, and they seemed to cool down. But Gerrit Cole, one of the Yankees' star pitchers, even though he has looked more handicapped than me at times this season, got out of the dugout pretty quickly, and it got pretty heated and things like that. They ended up pulling out, I believe it was a 4-2 victory against the Jays in the final game yesterday. But to take 3 of 4 after losing 9 of 11, as you said, previous to that, that has to be a huge confidence boost going into a series against the Boston Red Sox in Boston, where the Jays have played fairly well against the Red Sox at different points this season as well. Not to mention the fact that even though the Red Sox are back at the 500 mark or thereabouts now, they've struggled mightily at different points of the season as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, to this point against the Rays, the Blue Jays have been, it's kind of been a mirror of their season, right? They've had some really good games. They've had some pretty terrible games. Traditionally against the Rays, they struggle so mightily, but it was nice to see them bounce back in a tough place. You know, Yankee Stadium can be a tough place to play. They caught the Yankees at the right time. As you mentioned, they've really been struggling. And I just thought we started to see a little bit more of that swagger. And I think when this team plays their best baseball, they're playing with a little bit of confidence. I think Alek Manoah is a really good, encapsulation of the swagger that this team needs to do well. When they lack confidence, you really see it. And when they're on, you can see that confidence come through. It really pushes through that. And I think this team really needs that. Any thoughts on any finishing thoughts on Major League Baseball, anything you saw this weekend in the majors with the Blue Jays, with anything else that caught your attention?
Not really, to be honest with you. We are now getting into the absolute dog days of summer, as it were. You mentioned earlier that there's only about 43 games left, and because it has been so up and down in the American League East division for the vast majority of the season, it really is going to be a sprint to the finish, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. But I will tell you this, there is absolutely no rhyme or reason in my mind, and I believe your mind, that the Jays should not make the playoffs. So therefore, if they do end up missing the playoffs by one or two games for whatever reason, again, it is going to be a crushing blow to all Blue Jays fans, not only in Canada, but around the world.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we've done a pretty good job on this show, and I think in general, you know, the media in Toronto has done a good job of being fairly level-headed with a Blue Jays team where the expectations were sky high at the beginning of the season. The Jays are maybe a little short of that, but they are in the playoff picture. They've played incredibly well during stretches of the season. And I think you're right. I just don't see them falling out of the playoff picture at this point. I think that there's a lot of change. It's been a tumultuous season for different reasons with this squad, you know, with Charlie being let go and the team's roller coasters up and down, but there's still a lot of talent that still seems to be winning out. So, I think that also we have to keep in mind that teams like Baltimore is a great example. They're pushing towards that final wildcard spot, but this is the best baseball they've played all season. Can they maintain this type of level for the next 40 games? I tend to think that they can't. So again, that gives me more comfort that the Blue Jays will make the playoffs. That being said, if something goes sideways, and to steal a phrase from a friend of the show, Brian Burke, if the 18-wheeler somehow manages to go off the cliff, that I think would be really concerning, and we'd see some changes with the Blue Jays in general. I don't think it'd be sweeping changes, but it certainly would be a disappointment, and I think that that would trigger a little more vitriol from everyone in the Toronto media market. But for now, I think they're relatively safe.
And Paul, before we move on, you asked me if anything else intrigued me from the weekend, and it just popped into my head as you were talking, and I want to get your thoughts quickly on it. You know, at the beginning of the season, we had our MLB preview show with friend of the show and MLB insider John Paul Morosi, in which we talked about the fact that Hall of Famer and one of the top 10 best players of the era and of the last couple of decades, Albert Pujols, started this season only 21 home runs shy of 700. Now, the interesting thing about that, Paul, and our viewers and listeners, is for the vast majority of the first half of the season, he only had something like 7 home runs. Well, ladies and gentlemen, since August the 10th, he's hit something like 10 or 11 home runs to bring his total up to 692, which includes a 2-home run game over the weekend in Arizona. So something that didn't seem attainable just about a week and a half or 2 weeks ago seems like Albert Pujols wants to go out with one more blaze of glory and get that chase to 700 going right to the end of the year. What do you think his realistic chances are now, only being 8 home runs away with 42 or so games left?
Well, I, you know, personally, I'll be cheering for that big time. You know, Albert Pujols is a guy that has just played with so much class, and so he's been so talented for so long, such an ambassador for Major League Baseball. So I think I'm cheering for it for sure. I think that he can get there. You know, baseball is a really, it's a beautiful game in a lot of ways, where, and it's one of the, it's one of those sports where the sports gods, you know, the baseball gods, they feel more tangible in baseball. And I can't explain that. I don't have a reason for feeling that way. I just do. And this game has a very strange sense of justice. And I think that it would be a true injustice if Albert Pujols couldn't make it to 700. I think he's going to get there. And I just feel like the baseball gods are on his side.
Only time will tell, as I like to say.
That's right. That's right. As we switch our focus, we saw the World Junior Tournament, World Hockey Championships for the juniors restart in August to make up for the December tournament that was lost due to, you know, the COVID situation at the time. Really exciting final game. The Canada wins its fourth gold medal in the last, I believe, 10 years in just a thrilling overtime game with an unbelievable play by Mason McTavish. What were your thoughts on the gold medal game and your thoughts on the tournament overall?
I mean, you said it and I said it at the beginning of the tournament. It lost some of its luster and some of its special factor that it has starting on Boxing Day here in Canada and different things like that. But I believe they did the best they could for what they were given based on the circumstances of the pandemic at the time, like you said. But the one thing that I don't like about these tournaments, and I've mentioned this on the program before as well, is outside of Canada and like the U.S. and a couple of others, the overall tournament is nowhere near as strong as it needs to be. I mean, it's better than the women's side still. Marginally, but I just wish that it was more balanced in terms of putting money into the different programs around the world. I know that that is a unrealistic expectation on my part, but do you see what I'm saying there a little bit?
Sure. I mean, I do see what you're saying there. I think that, you know, we're seeing more and more more and more development in other countries beyond, you know, Canada, US, Sweden, you know, Finland, obviously, like those traditional powerhouse hockey markets. We're seeing players from other nations, you know, be being drafted. And as you see that happen, and as those programs begin to build, you see more like Latvia, for example, wins its first tournament game ever, makes its first quarterfinal ever, which is a really wonderful story. You know, but I think that the tournament itself showed me a couple different things. One, having lived in Edmonton, it's really hard to do something indoors in Edmonton in August. So the attendance definitely suffered from that because, you know, people want to be outside. People want to be enjoying their summer. They're away, this and that. I also think that this is a really great study in, you know, lack of the less marketing, less sponsorship, less coverage hurts the sport. And I think of that specific, hurts the event. And I think of that specifically when we talk about women's sports, you know, the argument of, you know, it not being as popular as the men's sports or not being this or not being that. If you promote it, if you sponsor it, if you give it the resources, it will do well for a multitude of reasons. Hockey Canada's, you know, recent issues and recent discoveries on Hockey Canada notwithstanding, there was less sponsorship, there was less advertisement, there was less focus on this tournament, and you saw the attendance hurt for that. Now, as we got into the medal games, it certainly felt more like a World Junior tournament as more people were in the building, as the games became more important. But I just believe that, you know, the bad will towards Hockey Canada right now, which is completely justified, you know, triggered a lack of a series of events for a lack of marketing, a lack of you know, endorsement, a lack of sponsorship that hurt the tournament overall. So I think there's lessons to be learned there, but I don't think that should affect the players on the ice. They worked hard. The tournament was very entertaining. The hockey games were very entertaining. And that final game was one of the most exciting hockey games that I've seen in recent memory.
I agree with you. Is there anything else on the docket before I bring our guest in for the episode?
One final thing on the list, Spence. The biggest story of NFL training camp was the lack of Tom Brady's presence at Tampa Bay Buccaneers training camp. And the question kept sort of getting kicked down the road. As of today, reports have surfaced that he's back at camp. He's back preparing. But just curious what your thoughts are on the absence, given what we know about Tom Brady, his meticulous preparation, the millions of dollars he spends to keep his mind and body right for an NFL season as he goes into, you know, I think he's 45 this year. So just thoughts, what do you make of the absence? And you know, what do you think this does to the preparation of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
Well, just to put it out there, and I'm sure lots of people will appreciate what I'm about to say, I'm not even 45 or a high-level professional athlete, and I need to do all I can to stop feeling like I'm 90 years old by the end of any given day. So I can only imagine what he needs to do. But, you know, I'm not making that big of an issue about it because obviously if it was big enough to pull him away from doing all of his preparation and things like that, I'm pretty sure it was a heavy personal thing with his family, no matter what it was. Maybe in time over the next couple of days, it will sort of gloss over what exactly it was without getting into too much detail. But, you know, Tom Brady wouldn't step away during the beginning of training camp like this if it wasn't excruciatingly important. So that's the way I'm looking at it. I don't know if you agree or not.
Yeah, I think overall I agree. A player of, well, his caliber, right? He's the best quarterback of all time. I don't think there's a whole lot of argument left on that page. His preparation is second to none. His ability to understand his offense and break down opposing defenses is exceptional. I believe he's earned the right to whatever this private matter is. I don't see it as an issue. I will be curious how it's handled based on the way that he plays when the real games start, right? I'm hopeful that everyone is respectful of that, but I do believe that there is a little there, like the questions are coming, right? They're going to ask him. And I think that that's valid, right? But I do believe that he deserves at least a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, knowing just how good he is, how many times he's done this. I think it will be fine, but it is very interesting. It's got my attention. That's for sure.
And just to end this part of the conversation, I'm actually going to bring our guest Sean in on this right now, just before we start the wrestling conversation. So Sean, if you wouldn't mind coming up closer to the mic here, the part of the conversation that I want to throw out to both of you right now is this. There is no question that Tom Brady is the best quarterback of all time. Absolutely. He has the most rings, and you're judged by championships at the end of the day. That's why, arguably, no matter what, Bill Russell will go down as the best basketball player of all time, just on sheer championships alone, 11 championships in 13 years and different things like that. However, one caveat is, would Tom Brady be the greatest of all time if he did not play into his mid-40s? Because, you know, we look at the way that that athletes are now, and they are way different than Joe Montana had during his prime, or even Michael Jordan had at his disposal during his prime and things like that. So do you honestly believe, and I'm going to start with you, Paul, that he would be the greatest of all time if he did not play until 42, 43, 44 years old when he won his record-breaking Super Bowl at that age?
Yes, I do. I think that, you know, he's won more championships after, what was it, like 38? I remember I saw the graphic, like he'd won more championships at 38, from 38 to 43 or whatever it was, than, you know, most quarterbacks win in their whole careers. He had four, and I think that's what like Bradshaw had, or, you know, something along those lines. And those who listen to us who care about the fact checking, go ahead and do that. I'm not going to do it. But even if he had quit after he had the most Super Bowl rings, he would have been the greatest of all time, in my opinion. Those teams were dominant, and he nearly had a perfect season. Every year he was in the conversation for MVP. The year that he was hurt in New England, they just were not the same team. It wasn't even close. So I just think that there, even if he had only got to four, he would still be the best of all time.
However, during that year that he did get hurt, you remember that Matt Castle went into the Belichick system and took that team to an 11-5 record. And they
did they win a Super Bowl?
No, they just missed out on the playoffs.
Yeah, that's exactly. So, like, you know what I mean? Like that there's he, and so all that before, you know, he gets into his 40s. Now, I think you have to talk about his longevity, how he's been able to stay healthy, stay mentally focused enough to continue to come back season after season after season, being the best. Even in the when it was clear that he wasn't going back to New England, he could have walked off into the sunset then and said, look, I'm done, right? Put me up in the pantheon of best quarterbacks, I'm done. And he didn't. He went and found a team. He went and found another, and went and won another Super Bowl. So for me, there's just the argument is there's nobody in his league right now. That's my thought.
Well, you heard from the partner in crime on the Isolation series and what he thought on my question. I'm going to bring our guest today, one Sean Sarasano, in and ask you the same thing. What are your thoughts on what we just talked about? Do you believe that Tom Brady would be considered the greatest of all time at the quarterback position if he did not play to the age that he is now of 45?
You know, Spencer, it's a great question. It really is. And I think, you know, that GOAT conversation, it's very subjective, right? It's based on people's opinions, and those opinions can be biased. If Brady didn't go to Tampa, I think that conversation is a little bit more open in terms of who else could be in that position. The fact that he left New England, went to a brand new team with a brand new system that didn't have Bill Belichick running it, and won them a Super Bowl in his first ever year playing with the team at the age that he was playing, I think it's hard to come up with any other quarterback who could challenge him for that GOAT status now because of what he did with a brand new team at his age. I would challenge anybody to find a quarterback that trumps Brady now and on that GOAT status.
Well, it just goes to show you that most people don't agree with my opinion a lot of the time, ladies and gentlemen, but my name is still on the front of this podcast, so there you go.
Well, I will bring up this thing. This is something that I read this morning, which is actually ties in nicely to this conversation, which is about Brady and where he was planning to go after his time in New England. And there's a report coming out this morning that was a conversation that happened at a press conference over the weekend during UFC 278, where Dana White has gone on record to say that he was very close to negotiating a deal to bring Brady and Gronk to Vegas to be part of the Las Vegas Raiders following, and instead of going to Tampa, it ended up falling out and they went to Tampa instead. But that would have been interesting to see what that success would have been like, seeing Brady and Gronk go to the Raiders after New England.
Absolutely. Switching gears, we're going to talk a little wrestling because Monday Night Raw, the flagship show that started in 1993, is back in Toronto, where Paul and myself reside, just outside of Toronto for Paul and in the heart of downtown for me. And Sean has come in just to enjoy Monday Night Raw because he's a big wrestling fan as well. And that's how we initially met. So, gentlemen, I'm going to start with you, Sean, on this. Mm-hmm. We know that over the last few weeks, there's been quite a shakeup in the front office of World Wrestling Entertainment with the retirement of Vince McMahon and new positions being bestowed upon Stephanie McMahon and Paul Triple H Levesque, along with Bruce Pritchard and different people. So what has your thoughts been in the first 3 weeks or so immediately following all of that shakeup?
I'm still trying to gather my thoughts, to be honest, Spencer. I'm sort of watching and seeing things unfold. It's good to see some talent that were released under Vince's decision-making process now being brought back. I was a big fan of what Triple H did with NXT back in the day. And to think that he could bring that same level into the main roster is quite exciting, actually. I think it's been too early to say. It's only been a few weeks. But I'm very hopeful to the future. I think Vince is a legend. I know, and nobody can disagree with that, right? Vince is a legend, and none of us would be wrestling fans had it not been for Vince McMahon. But I think his retirement should have happened years ago. You know, I'm glad that we have a new direction right now.
Now, Paul, I want to get your thoughts. We talked about this off the air a little bit. What do you think is going to happen for somebody like Ricochet under a Triple H led creative team? Because we've talked about the fact that Ricochet has arguably the best move set from a talent perspective on the roster, and he was doing great things in NXT. Then he got called up to the main roster and really has gotten lost in the shuffle. So do you anticipate something happening for somebody like Ricochet again, or not really?
Well, I mean, I believe so. Ricochet is certainly maybe the most athletic performer. Whether he's the best is I think, very subjective. But I think that it allows opportunities for guys who don't fit the Vince McMahon mold of what wrestlers should look like. And I mean, that's changed over the years, but some of the consistent themes we saw were big, muscly, you know, larger than life type characters on their physical appearance, kind of neglecting their athleticism or their ability to talk or their, you know, all the things that make wrestling entertaining when it's action, it's acting, it's, you know, theater, it's athleticism, it's all these strange things. But Vince had a very narrow window as to what he believed a star looked like. So with someone like Triple H in charge of that creative, I think he has a more modern view of wrestling, understanding that, you know, fans can get behind wrestlers regardless of size, shape, gender, you know, all of these things. So I think it updates that. I do want to touch quickly on Vince McMahon and his status, right? As a wrestling promoter, I believe that he's the greatest promoter of all time. I don't think there's much argument there. But of everything that he's done, and I believe I've said this on this show, and if not, I've said it before, nothing that he has done in the world of wrestling can outweigh the pain that he's caused these people. So his retirement should have come long before this, and it is sad that it had to come to, you know, this this bitter end that is nothing but just completely tarred by him being a garbage human. So while I appreciate what he's done for wrestling, he's also, his mentality of wrestling is part of the reason it's such a toxic place to exist. And, you know, with less people like Vince McMahon, wrestling in 2022 is in a better place as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. Well, very, very well said. Shifting a little bit, just to end on a more sort of positive note than that, you know, the WrestleMania, I don't know how many years it's been going on now, for at least I'd say about 7 or 8, where they have gone to a Olympic style bid for WrestleMania, for the big stadium shows and things like that. I had this debate with Sean when he arrived in Toronto earlier this weekend, and I want to get your thoughts on it, Paul, because I don't agree with him at all, which quite frankly happens all the time. But he says now under the new regime of Stephanie and Triple H and Bruce, that there is a better opportunity for WrestleMania to come back to Toronto for the first time in over two decades. And I do not agree with that, just simply based on the fact that if you look at places like Cowboys Stadium, like SoFi Stadium, like Lincoln Financial Field, which has been announced as the host for next year's WrestleMania 40, they all hold upwards of 80, 90,000. During its peak, when it had WrestleMania 6 and 18 respectively, Sky Dome Rogers Center held 67 or so thousand. It has been it has been reconfigured a little bit since then during a little bit of their renovations over the years, so that it only holds about 50 to 52,000. And I just don't think even over 2 days they would want to get that small number in comparison to maybe close to 200,000.
Well, see, here's the thing. There's two numbers that float around. So I agree with you in the sense that it's challenging to come back to a smaller venue. But knowing that, we have to believe what WWE says, and we know that those numbers, like the 93,000 that they love to tout from WrestleMania 3, was actually closer to 77,000. There are reports that say that the WrestleMania they did at Cowboy Stadium was less than 100,000. They, of course, pegged it as more than 100,000. So what's the real number and what's the capable number? If the Sky Dome or Rogers Center can get somewhere close to 75 to 80,000 people in a configuration that works for WWE, I believe over two nights, since they've spread WrestleMania out, that would be the best chance we have to have that wrestling back, because WWE could say that it's sold out at 80,000, 88,000, whatever number they want to make up, and talk about the whole weekend being, you know, almost 200,000 fans, right? Where, and they can do that at SoFi, and they can do that at these giant stadiums. So I, you know, I don't think they're coming back to the Sky Dome. I just don't think that they have, I think that they are going to try and find the newest, latest, greatest, you know, mega stadium in the US that can hold WrestleMania. I think that's where they'll go, or they'll go to markets, New York, LA, Chicago, etc. But if there was a chance, it would be because it's two nights, right? And they really could make it sound larger than life, which is something that they love to do. So while I don't think it's coming back, I wouldn't say that the chance is zero. We'll put it at that.
Right. And because I had this conversation with Sean, I want to get you to weigh in here, because you clearly have your rose-colored glasses on when talking about this and everything like that. So now that you've heard both Paul and I sort of bring some reality to the situation. And
well, I'd like to jump in here. Yes. Give my two cents and actually replay the conversation you and I had. The conversation that you and I had, Spencer, was I asked you if you believed that now that there is a greater chance of it coming to Toronto, you mentioned the audience thing in the stadium, and which I agree with you at the end of that conversation. Now, that being said, let me say why I do think there is a higher potential under Hunter and Stephanie in the new regime. I think that Paul looks at things a little bit more holistically and looks at things as in growing the product. You can see that where he started NXT, NXT UK, which has now been moved over to NXT Europe. By having WrestleMania in these markets, like a Toronto, which would open up the Canadian market, if they were going bring WrestleMania to a London or somewhere in England, open up that UK market. I think it's more so for the growth of those markets there. I think he has that more longer term thinking than Vince had, but Vince was just all eyes on WrestleMania, make it the biggest and best weekend possible, and then start over on Monday for Monday Night Raw, rinse and repeat. So I do think because of that, perhaps if they want to grow the Canadian market, there's an opportunity. But overall, I agree with both you and your co-star Paul here that the stadium is not the type of stadiums that they've been going into for the last 10 years. So that's a big damper on the hopes of coming back.
Right. And last couple things here. When I mentioned to Paul that you were coming on as a special contributor to this show today. He wanted to know what one of your top wrestling stories would be involving me. And I said, okay, we'll wait till the end of the show and ask Sean to come up with one of his favorite wrestling stories that he is able to tell in public. So do that now.
So that narrowed it down to what, like one, Sean, maybe two?
Yeah, I mean, there's some.
But how many are appropriate?
You know, here's one. We got talking about Vince, and we've had conversations with folks within the company who have said, you know, they've worked for the company for 10, 15, 20 plus years, on the road 300 days a year with the rest of the crew, and their whole career maybe had two words with Vince or a 5-minute conversation with Vince in 20 years. And we were backstage at SummerSlam a few years ago, and Spencer had the opportunity of having a few minutes conversation with Vince, and you could see that he was very busy and at first maybe looking to just have a quick hello and then get moving on to whatever meeting or appointment or task he was off to next. But once Spencer started talking, you can see Vince sort of settle right in and be in the moment with Spencer. And, you know, Spencer made a bit of an emotional case or an emotional admission to Vince that because of his work that he's done in wrestling, and developing the brand the way it is, that it's helped people like Spencer get through some tough times. And when I say this with no exaggeration, you could see the tears start to well up a little bit in Vince's eyes. He was certainly very appreciative of that emotional moment that Spencer and Vince had, and not too many people saw that. So I think that, you know, that's something that really stands out to me. And then on the flip side of that, I'd say another one would be when Spencer tried to hit on Alexa Bliss and she wanted no part of that.
Yes. Well, let me just preface that by saying, or not preface it, but let me just clarify by saying, Paul, that leading up to that interaction with Alexa Bliss, all of the guys had heard me say that I would date Alexa Bliss in a New York minute, essentially. So what did they do when we were backstage and they saw her go by? They're like, oh, hey, Alexa, you need to come and meet our buddy Spence because he said that he would date you in a New York minute, blah, 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 blah. And it resulted in one of the most awkward conversations I have ever had in the entire history of my life, but it was hilarious because everybody was laughing their head off. And
did you feel like you were thrown under the bus?
I not only did I feel like I was thrown under the bus, I felt like I was thrown under a fleet of buses.
Kind of like what you did with me yesterday with the whole Caleb Braxton thing.
Oh, yes. Okay, so full disclosure, Paul, you'll enjoy this story, and so will the audience as well, I hope. We had lunch with the show off himself, Dolph Ziggler, yesterday. So right when Dolph gets there, Sean joins us a couple minutes later, or it was vice versa or whatever. Anyways, we had just gotten to the restaurant and we're sitting there and we're talking, and he's like, hey Spence, what's going on? Blah blah blah. And I said, Dolph, Sean is very jealous of you. And he goes, oh, really? I go, yeah. He goes, why? And I go, because Sean's new quote unquote crush is Caleb Braxton. And I said to Sean, well, you need to fight DZ over, because DZ has already, you know, hung out with Caleb Braxton and everything else like that. And I vehemently threw Sean completely under the bus. Both him and Dolph were blushing so hard. It was amazing. That was a great, great thing. Speaking of which, do you have anything to share with the audience that sticks out for you from the lunch yesterday, other than me throwing you under the bus?
Just how cool Dolph is, yes. You know? And the evidence in terms of your guys' friendship and your relationship, you know, he came to visit you and have lunch in between two shows, right? We're in Toronto. He had a show the night before in Kingston, a show that night in London, Ontario. His hotel's closer to the airport, and he makes the 45-minute drive out of the way to come downtown just to have lunch with Spencer and then go back and head back to London for his house show. So,
which, by the way, he showed up 15 minutes before he actually had to go out and wrestle last night, thanks to me, but I digress. And because we are sharing lots of fun stories and different things like that, I'm just going to flip it on to you here, Paul, for a moment as we close this episode out and ask you if you have any, you know, wrestling moments over the years between you and I, or a wrestling story that you can also share with the audience that sticks out for you, with you and I over the years as well, because we've known each other for a amazingly long amount of time, even though I've aged gracefully and you not so much.
Well, we can't all have that, bone structure, Spence, you know, those perfect cheeks. So give me a break. I'm doing my best. I haven't had the opportunity to do a lot of in-person, right? I mean, listeners of this show know how you set up my wife and I at SummerSlam in Vegas two SummerSlams ago. I got us unreal seats, which was amazing. You know, I got my first chance of seeing Edge live, you know, upon his return. It had been probably 10 or 11 years since I saw him live, which was really important, really exciting for me. And of course, the appreciation that I had for you and helping hook us up. But what I think I remember like recent memories is, you know, sort of in the heart of the pandemic, when somehow wrestling was still happening and the world was wild around us and there was no fans in the building. You and I would watch events through FaceTime, and we would it was one of those things that, in the middle of everything that was so abnormal, felt so normal, right? Like, you know, ordering a pizza and watching wrestling with my friends was something that we were still able to do. And I think about, you know, particularly that first WrestleMania that was two nights, you and I watching that Brock and Drew McIntyre match together. It was such a strange world that we were living in, but I got these moments of normalcy from just being able to hang out and watch wrestling with you, even though we were separated by a screen. So it's very fond. It's very something I think of very highly. And I look forward to, you know, more nights like tonight, where all of us will be enjoying Raw in the same building here now that they've returned to Toronto after a 3-year hiatus.
Now, you know, what I'm most excited about for tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is finally being able to give Paul his American Nightmare Cody Rhodes shirt that I've seemingly had in my possession for how long, Paul?
It's been a while. We were supposed to go to Buffalo and see Raw when they returned to Buffalo, but unfortunately we had some snafu with some drivers and this and that. But so it's been a couple months, but I'll be glad to see you in person, and I'll be excited to rock my new American Nightmare tee.
Absolutely. For the one and only Paul Shields and our wonderful guest host over here today, another dear, dear friend of mine of over 20 years. You know, when we originally met, we dubbed ourselves, our wrestling moniker is the Double S Effect because of Sean and Spencer. Yes.
You're Marty Jannetty, though. I'm
sorry. And according to him, as you just heard, I'm Marty Jannetty and he's Shawn Michaels. That can be up for debate right there itself. But thank you so much, Sean, for taking the time to join us here on this special Monday edition of the Isolation Series. And we look forward to having you on again with us, hopefully not too close from now, but again, sometime in the next year or so.
Right on, dude, in the next year.
All right, fantastic. This has been another great episode of the Isolation Series. We look forward to coming at you again later on in the week. And as always, we appreciate the viewers and or listeners of this program, as well as our great sponsors, which includes Bronte Lakeside Condominiums, Toronto's greenest condominiums, 1, 2, and 3 bedroom suites starting at $700,000. For more information, You can go to BronteLakeside.ca, and they are in partnership with Alliance United. As I said, we look forward to coming at you again later on in the week. But for now, enjoy the rest of your Monday with whatever it is that you are doing, and we will talk to you again very soon. Bye-bye. And Paul, please tell people all about some more whole grain goodness that is us.
Folks, be sure to check us out on podbean.com by going to theisolationseries.podbean.com. There you'll find the audio-only versions of the podcast, including all of our past amazing interviews. One more time, that's theisolationseries.podbean.com. And hey, don't forget to follow us on Instagram. It's at @thespencermiller and at Pauly Shields, Pauly spelled P-A-W-L-Y. So find us on podbean.com, follow us on Instagram, and don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.
And once again, everybody, thank you for watching and or listening and supporting this thing we like to call the Isolation Series. For Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller, and we will see you again very, very soon. Bye-bye.